first poem is called Cafe Anthropology. And Cafe Anthropology is the study of citizens of the Western civilization in cafes. Your proud cheekbones, stretched over by waxy yellow skin, green eyes flecked with gold. You mistake the slender form for beauty, lust for admiration, sex for success. I will curl my sweaty palm to cup your narrow schoolboy hip, the wishbone of your groin, fragile and absurd beneath my finger, all chicken wire and cold latex. Your body bends but does not yield. Next one's then a letter to America, and it is a letter to America. Don't give me that hurt look when you catch me in bed with the Mujahideen. What did you expect? Unconditional love. My therapist tells me that our relationship is codependent. She tells me to change the lock and detach with love. I'm tired of making excuses for you. To my friend Abdul, his eyes are full of tears and rage. His loss kept safe in a locket by his heart. You've gone too far this time. You can't buy your way out of this one. I should have left you long ago. And the last one is called The Woman Puts Her Arm Around the Man, which is about the time I was in an airport and I saw a woman put her arm around the man. So, a woman, drenched in furs, rests her ring befuddled hand on her man's leather-spread shoulder. They're the same height, but it's her wretched, pasty hand that claims the shoulder, whilst his own hairy maw dangles pocketwards. Does she own him?
Thank you, Gavin. Next up, we have someone else who we just managed to rob off the White House in Limerick. There's two we've got now, so they're going to be up here in force trying to steal some of our poets back soon enough. Making to the first time of the All-Ireland Slam Championship, he's a Slam Champion himself. Could you please welcome Mr. Chris Cullen.
Hello, how are you doing?
Hi, Paul.
I thought I'd get away with reading some older poems here because no one would have heard me, but it turns out that Paul would have, and Edward would have, and Jean would have as well, so sorry to you guys. This is called Forgotten Dreams. Why should love reside in a place where death regrets? A flippant movement towards chastity inevitably forgets what time begot. As the furnace burns with eager intent, we watch as innocence runs from the circus tent. What lies on the other side of that fearfully fixed smile the clown so anxiously bears? Why should love reside in a place where death regrets? Daring to dance with the dew in the dark, never denying the energy as it defies death. Youth is wasted on the young and lamented by the old. So when does it then feel warm in the cold? The dying artist's exhibition portrays the sincerity reflected through a child's drawings of simplicity. Why should love reside in a place where death regrets? Listen to the cold, callous way which hatred and penitence forsake meanings pure and sacred. Run from the hurricane to embrace the rainbow, from one color to another and then back to purity. Our silver lining will begin to fade to black. Harness each and every cloud with help from the sun's rays. Extenuate the exocries and die to be misunderstood, and watch as the eagle flies and cry if you think you should, because why should love reside in a place where death regrets? Thank you. Thank you. This is called I Have Played the Soldier, I suppose it's about inner battles. I have played the soldier to entice honor into my thief's soul, willing to suffer death before this hope dies. There's no honor among thieves, so I remove him from his peers. somewhere within me dwells my commander in chief, slowly gaining the strength to rule. The battle it rages on with subtle ignorance, tempting fate to lay all cards clear on the table, age old and never ending, forcing emotion to dance in the rain for clarity. Friendly fire to discipline the frontline few, with diminishing returns to the protected emperor. More than the sun reflected in frozen eyes, see the withering flower bow. This field of fleeting glances recoils into memory banks of forgetfulness, releasing the thief to where the honor fades. Playful smoke now entertains the dumb and the defeated, awakening to another day where last night's dreams fill the hourglass, haunted by the promise of redemption, waiting to count the stars in resistance once again. The last one I'm going to read is called It Is You. Was it you who placed me on this sphere of incontinuity, teasing with your notions of a will charged at no price? Was it you who christened me with blind faith as my eyes slowly began to open wide? Was it you? Was it you who gave me exactly what I really needed rather than giving me all that I wanted? Was it you who whispered into my ear that you must always thank the hand which feeds? Is it you showing me the beauty in all the world contains, blessing me with the stars? Is it you pointing my intentions down paths crossed with those of similar circumstance? It is you who carries my graces and provides the life which glistens through the tunnel. It is me who must overcome and raise my head to the clouds, seeking that always elusive silver lining.
Thanks, Chris. I'm trying to look for a word that brings ambrosia and Shannon together, you know, like Ambrosiana or something, you know? And we've got some more Ambrosiana up next, Mr. Edward O'Dwyer.
This first poem is about a woman that used to live near me, and she was a recluse, so she never left her house. And when you're a kid, you know, you can think all kinds of things about a woman like this. But this is called The Witch. Strange and shunned woman from the dark, rickety old house at the street's end. The one with the overgrown, weed-riddled garden and rusted, paint-peeled gates. All the cats sitting in the dirty windows. This is my apology. Necessary still, though years late. For listening to the story and for believing it. For filling nightmares with you, images of a slime green face through the steam from a big black cauldron, and the day you'd finally get me. For shivering at the sight of your grey eye peering out of the slit in the curtains. For fearing the curse you'd put on me, and the only curse, the one my fear put on you. And for spreading the story, passing it down years after, when I knew it had all been a joke. In the end, you died alone from your old age, but for years while you lived, I was part of a horrid mob, was pinning you on a stake, was spitting gasoline words on you, watching you burn.
Second poem is a limerick poem.
Oh!
Yeah. And for those of you that don't know, myself and Chris, we're from Limerick, and we read poetry in a pub called The White House usually. We live here now, The White House usually. But outside The White House, on O'Connell Street, which is the equivalent of your Patrick Street, is the Daniel O'Connell Monument. And around the monument is a wishing fountain. As you know, Daniel O'Connell is called the Liberator as well. His poem is called The Liberator. The discernment and decorum of a poetry reading at the White House we shed easily as inhibitions with a drink or two. By 3 a.m., soaked to the skin, dancing, kissing, and splashing in Daniel O'Connell's fountain. "Get me a coin," you said. "You must have seen my suspicions," when a moment later you'd added, "Please, I want to make a wish." How could I refuse? As I leaned, tentatively reaching in and down through the inky dark for that shining copper moon at the bottom, farther than it seemed, you pushed me. How could you not? I went over, face first. But I don't remember you now as the brazen bitch I thought there and then. Rather, as a liberator, returning to me what I'd lost. Freedom. And like all freedom, this was wings with which to fly. To fly high enough, bring back even the shining copper moon. On a lighter note, it's a new poem called Our Rugby World Cup.
Your poem is short.
Jesus, that's too heavy.
Refreshing stuff.
All right. Expectation and hope, slowly over the 4 years, inflated one deep breath at a time, and then looped and tied to hold our incompressible belief. But the pressure of the crunch moment rose undetected like a pin, and dreams burst like a balloon, so sudden and frightfully as balloons do. And so we cried like children, and you cannot console us. No, not us, whose expectation, whose hope was fragile, vulnerable as the air inside the thin sheet of rubber.
Thanks, Edward. Next up, Sian, we have someone who's new to our vale. Could we welcome Mr. Neil O'Sullivan?
I also read in the White House one, so since you mentioned it last night. The first poem is called Stairway to Purgatory, and it's kind of a tagline which kind of illuminates it a little by the called Soren Kierkegaard. It's, anxiety is the dizziness of freedom. I always thought that freedom was a precious thing, to be savoured, defended if necessary. And I made no case for the merit of its absence, but why do I grimace in this taste at its bitter flavour? It makes me look for the future through a mist of yesterdays, like mucky water that longs to be clay. I never thought of hearing myself say it. I could mould myself had I sculptor's skill. But I had never known the score, and if I ever could have been a leading player, well, I must have missed that meeting. I've never been anything more than a humble background artist who hangs from fragile chicken wire, lacking enough to ease his fall and with nothing to haul him higher. While the play unfolds below, a singing, dancing minstrel show with all usual music hall cliches intact. A soundtrack that screams with banshee wail of unsettling dreams, and lighting that serves to illuminate the colourful and bright in dull black and white, or so it seems to me. And this is freedom? This is not free. When the only choice lies in not choosing, and the only dependable thing is uncertainty. I'd rather be in chains than this free. It's like one of the, it's kind of a play on Franz Kafka's Metamorphosis book called Transformation. When Gregory Simpson awoke one night from unsettling dreams, he found himself transformed into an enormous walnut. It's the constant strife for the poison soil and the declining oil and the quality being sucked out of the earth by the stress and the traffic jam and the ungovernable mess and the mindless garbage on the front page of every idiotic newspaper in this retarded age. But his wife didn't speak walnut and kissed him front doors and wished him good day. Driving to work, he was stopped at a checkpoint. The police asked him to please exit his vehicle and kindly roll in a straight line. It's the work, night and day, it's the cancer from the cathode rays. It's genetic engineering. It's the relentless veering to the political far right by the religious right, with all of the might of the forces of night, masquerading as day. It's the way half the time, half the day, half believe, half the bleeding things they say. But the police didn't speak walnut. Satisfied that the papers were in order, sent him on his way. Sitting at his desk, his secretary handed him his morning flirt. It's the binge drinking, the ice caps are sinking, the warning lights are blinking, the crime rate is rising, the sperm count is falling, the government is, as it's always been, utterly appalling. But his secretary didn't speak walnut, or if she did, she wasn't letting on. You worked hard all day, which isn't easy if you were a walnut, especially the typing, which generally speaking is easier for members. Arrived home at his usual 10 p.m, ate his usual cold corned beef sandwich supper, and worried as usual into the early hours. It's the shoddy health system, the Tresno pension, the awful state of rock and roll, the earth could be hit by an asteroid or sucked into a black hole, it's the terrorist scares, the hole in the old one layer, the million mutant viruses, we haven't got a prayer. And as usual, he couldn't sleep a wink. All he could do was totter on the brink. And so he lay on the bed like a nut. He slept with his eyes wide open. And that would call The Last Temptation of Elvis. Elvis wept, tears of stone in some heartbreak hotel oblivion, feeling so lonely in his personal purgatory, when a horde of other lost deities, all sunglasses and study cool, opened their arms to him, understood his weird words and lamentable exit, and invited him to take his rightful place among the pantheon. And he took it. And he gazed out at the faces of friends and newer companions in this oddly familiar landscape where all the angels floated by on puffs of clouds wearing nothing but tiny white cotton panties. And as the sting and the suffering started to recede, but Elvis knew this was heaven indeed. Aww. The years fell, it felt so good from his same weary bones. And his Vegas smile was bright again. And buckets of barbiturates, morphine, valium, codeine, mesaspolone, ethanamate, loperidine were unabsorbed from his bloodstream. And 100,000 cheeseburgers and fried banana and peanut butter sandwiches released their fatty lips from their own palate. And once again he was that smooth and dangerous guitar-slinging white trash singer with the hicks of mercury in his sound like warm thunder. And in that moment of clarity, Elvis knew that how far he had fallen was in direct proportion to how high and fast he flew. And the fallen gods, their gift to him for the pure perfection of his moment in the sun, was another opportunity.
a new destiny to walk on a path less blessed and cursed. Take it, they said, this simple life. The wife and kids, life assurance, the daily grind, with no one paying you, no, never mind. We're talking utter anonymity here, the all uncomplicated, unexamined bit. And he gazed on what might have been. His heart swelled, fit to burst, the tears squeezing thick from his eyes, and he had to squeeze his ties with the intensity until the wave passed and the level of it turned tolerable. And in that second moment of clarity, it was an illuminating day for him. Elvis knew what he had to do, and he'd done it. And in it, Elvis was king again, and not just some good old country boy, out of his depth and squashed like a fly by a rolled-up newspaper and watched by the world as he died, twitch by twitch by twitch. And with a smile twice as bright as any star, Elvis turned his back on what was offered, grateful for the opportunity, but let the judgment stand. With no little sense of regret, you understand, but this world needs all the warnings it can get. Thank you.
Next up to the mic, no stranger to the aisle, Mary O'Connell.
Yeah, just do one. This is about what happens when a tape goes, I mean, I know that people don't use cassettes anymore, so this is about a cassette that I talked about and have played up. So it's called Wound Up. Cassettes have been supplanted, however, not by me. Recording over previous tracks, I use them constantly. I must have pushed it to the edge. One tape went out of tune and babbled high-pitched gibberish like a deranged baboon. I tried to get it to unwind, but it was too far gone. No doubt I'd overloaded it with speech, if not with song. Too many gangland killings recorded from the news brought on a total breakdown as if it blew a fuse. That shiny brownish ribbon reacted like my brain. Press one too many buttons, we crack beneath the strain.
Problems with your cassette recorders at home. let Mary know. Sort it out for you. Next up to the mic, someone who's never been here before, Mr. Gene Barry.
Okay, that was meeting last Saturday afternoon. That was something else, man. Well done. When I heard Edward Ringan O'Hale the first night, having met him up in Limerick, I was wondering what it was like, and I was thinking about the way he read it, and he was torture into O'Hale was like a family member reaching across the breakfast table, and tonight from Chris Lang it was like you handed them back something else, but the whole thing kind of gelled together. I thought it was really cool. So I'm going to give 3 minutes tonight, I think. First they're called Bone Blocks. This is a recent poem. I had to collect 3 guys recently up in Shannon from Belarusia, and when I collected the 3 of them, I didn't realise they were going to be in wheelchairs, so it was just unbelievable. So this is called Bone Knot. No one has seen the walls that hover around you, shields that only land occasionally in polluted fields of adulthood, perverted by deaf ears and confused and troubled as your country's barriers. Your birth year blew you a second violation, nuclear, a shock to torture your family, now summoned to a life of querulous free life, or to live a querulous free life. Is there a pause of gratitude lurking in your twisted frame, burying volumes of antiquity, those beasts that bite you after binding? Is there an Olympian cage within, breaking ribbon after ribbon, a podium tenant writing heroic cantatas, a screamer without an audience? Are your triptychs as grey as a funeral procession, or as pleasing as a lap of honour? Thank you. Staying Alive. Against every corner's blind side awaits your bucket of love. No shopping list, no handle. For notice, it shifts itself into view and tugs bereavement's thick mist with timeless patience. Sup, good woman. Hurdles of reasoning being climbed and restood, knees too sore to kneel. The facade of failures begging for a makeover, an unetched headstone, a beast to slaughter. Monday, glimpsed a noted sadness, a physical push to excavate, the calendar of staying alive waiting to celebrate, or card-giving occasions, to saddle relinquishment, to bridle her future. Many days now, inertness waits in ambush, primed with punishment. Sharpshooter, anxious to anoint, fountains of tears swelling up the inside of your hurting frame, your emotional wardrobe growing into its unfashionability. Thanks. I read this one in Limerick actually a month ago. I don't know how many people here tonight remember the days of the gas man coming when you had to put a bob in the meter, and it was a huge event because the word would go around the street that the gas man was around and his wife, and every mother, like my mother with seven children, lit every candle and knelt and bowed and tossed her head and everything else, and you never knew how much you were going to get back or how much the guy would take from you, whichever way, I don't know. So this is called the gas man, and I suppose it's probably from my mother really. She knew without question that it was Mary who directed him along her tangent. Someone had caught sight of the custom-built black bike. His aged brown bag led him through his introduction, her emotional recruits masked by Oscar-winning pretense, and he, her Afghan light with a baggins bow, vanished where candles were not to be lit for fear of gas leaks under our stairs. Their key to relieving worry was produced and quickly opened the treasure box. Please God, my mother whispered beneath her staring jewelry. Silently she prayed. A virulent glory cast his way as copper and silver prints of greyhounds, bulls and the royal family decorated our formica table. Leisure them all, I contemplated, as long, dirty, hairy fingers built towers you'd see in shops, and made pencil calculations in the wrinkled red jotter. I watched a biased referee, a pursuance of recruited stacks, unfairly enter his playground, whilst stage left in a roof she entertained the sink. Politely he postulated, manorial she listened, with casual-like pretenses, blind to the stack she'd left behind and open to his amnesty. She locked the outside world away, retrieved her smile and fed her starving alveoli from the doldrums she dredged her dignity. Longing for a pair of comforting arms, she smiled and planned as she removed the coppers from our mobile safe that was her slipper. We banged the upturned pots with child's joy, plunged ourselves into her happiness, and off to the chop Jim went for Toy Tone biscuits.
Thank you, Jean. Next up, she has been around for a little while, it's Greg O'Bailer, Mr. Aaron Lewis.
Oh, afternoon, everybody. I want to make one.
Adam Wise does a course every Monday in might be in here next week, and it's from 11 till 1, and it's a creative writing course, and then from 2 to 4 he does a poetry workshop. I've got some information if you want to see me at the end, and Paul will give you some information. There's the flyer on the wall as well, but we did some workshops today and some exercises.
Is it still the appreciation part in the afternoon?
Yeah, he's going to bring appreciation back from next week. Just today there was just two.
Okay, so it's poetry workshop in the morning, and then
it's creative writing in the morning from 11 till 1, and then from 2 to 4 it's poetry appreciation. And then he's going to do a nightline class as well for those people who couldn't make it in the daytime. We were asked today to write down key moments in our lives that have changed us or had a huge impact or memorable moments. And the exercise was to write a monologue or a story about that story, and link it with a song that moved us as well, a piece of music that we liked. So I did this, and it's not very polished, but I just feel that I could get across anyway. A dark cave, alone, light streaming through the chink. Then children of the sea dance with glee and love for being alive. Carl Jenkins, Adi Amos. I walk slowly to the shore, the lap of the cool ocean baptizes my feet. Stripped down to my shorts, freezing water washes my body, the children in the distance still having fun. Me back on the shore like an ice pop, getting redressed. Luke and Andrea come back from their hunter-gatherer expedition. Did you see them? I said. They looked to the sea, straight in an instant, down to boxer shorts and dreadlocks. Splash, crash, Adi Amos, Adi Amos. Andrea down to his boxer shorts and glasses. The flow of melodic play of oboes and other woodwinds encapsulate my awe of this moment. Am I to miss out this once-in-a-lifetime expression of a universal... I might to miss out this once in a lifetime universal bliss. I pluck up the courage to go back in the water. Crash splashes the waves on my naked, cold, goose pimpled body. Adi Amos, Adi Amos, playing in the background of my mind. A witness to this unfolding drama, I am so cold I began to almost hyperventilate. I get out of the water, back on the shore again, watching the single play of form. I'm a witness I don't want to be. I get back in the water. Adi Amos, cymbals crash, voices caress, the music, the sound electrify my experience. I swim out in my cold state. The keepers of the ocean come back and acknowledge our presence. They go under, around, above, jump, splash, crash, have fun, make their zipping noises. Adi Amos plays in my mind. Carl Jenkins processing this experience through words and music. Then Luke gets out of the water. He's too slim and getting cold. We stay there, drifting out to sea. We swim back. Then as we go closer to the shore, they follow us and give us one last stand, crescendo. A flurry of voices echoes. We leave the ocean and the children still dance. I was in that happened to me in May 2007. My friend went down to collect some mussels down at Rocky Roberts Cove, and then we went to Rocky Bay and we went off to collect some sea snails, and I was just sitting in this cave and I looked over into the ocean and I was
about the dolphins.
I wrote a haiku about that tune as well, so I'll say the haiku to kind of say that in French. For those who don't know what a haiku is, because I didn't know what a haiku is, and I hear all of these poetic words, and when I was reading out the poetry, I just like all of these words coming at me, and I didn't know, and I feel that it's important to tell people what these words mean. So the haiku is a Japanese poem, and it's 5 syllables in the first line, 7 syllables in the second line, 7 in the second line, and 5 in the third line. So the Japanese use these poems to express nature and stuff like that. So, children of the sea, dancing, prancing for themselves. I watch. Children of the sea, dancing, prancing for themselves, I stand dumbfounded. This is not my work, but it's something that I've read more than once here, but I needed it myself today. Actually, I was a bit all in my head, and yeah, so a friend gave me a tape, and on the tape was a story, a Native American story, and it touched me a lot, and I really like to share it with people. This is a story that would be told to a lost child. What do you do when you're lost in the forest? What do you do if you can't find your way around? This was a real question asked by a Native American child grown up in the Climax Cedar Forest of the Northwest. It could also be a question asked by a street kid grown up in Cork or Limerick or Dublin or Newcastle, wherever. It could also be a question asked by someone who's given their lives over to something greater, but they've lost themselves in innocent beauty, like all those celebrities you see on in the front of the magazine. And so the child asked the elder, what do I do when I'm lost in the forest? And here's the answer that the elder gives. The elder says, stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here. Stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here. And you must treat it as a powerful stranger. Must ask permission to know it and be known. Listen. The forest breathes. It whispers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back staying here. No two trees are the same to ravens, no two branches are the same to rams. If what a tree or a branch does is lost on you, then you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you.
Could we welcome Jennifer Matthews?
My words of useless letters, deadweight vowels, silent H's and empty W's, space food pills comprised only of vitamins and other useful parts, efficient and substanceless. The letter Y is left for question forms, the letter U carries hope. These light words, unburdened of excess, anorexic. They deny emotion for condensed control and consummate heavy protection. Your reply is impassive, factual as biscuit packets, and I start to lose you. Your freckles crumble off, fine hair disintegrates, and your round brown eyes shut down. They've gone the way of other immaterial information.
Thank you, Jennifer. And next up we have Eileen Lorden.
It is to be up there in the trees on a summer evening, the birds singing, or listen to them. Climbing up the mountains on a frosty morning, I watch the children playing, the sheep eating the grass, the birds sing their song on my tree. They wake me up early in the morning.
How we felt, how we shared, your indifference to our day, are the two people informed into this couple by the wisdom. By the same wisdom, it was never meant to be. Whatever virtue had, I missed it all. Not you nor I care about the others to care, both past, present, and future, how he lives, how he died, if the breath that had passed through his bloodless lips to cease to occupy us. To let that whale help us here as I flail against the pricks and the forces of a quest that consumes our affection. Perfection is a strange thing. Strange as then as now, for as long as two times as itself dies. Twins at the wrist, yes, but all about interlocking fingers. And this one is called I Cannot Write You a Verse. I can't write you a verse, but let me say this. Tell me, for I cannot answer, why your absence, calling your voice, cannot grieve me. I understand you are lonely. Feel the cough in the blood from the Zura in distance. I feel the same. My very gained senses can't match yours one today. Although I spend my days looking for a corner at the corner of a map, or writing letters, or falling in the mind of a deranged lover, that's not how it is at home. Even with such depth at this length of time, this natural serenity breaks no locks, nor conjures any breaks in sleep. Carve me nonetheless, for I might even love you. Thank you very much.
Next up, we have Sinead Ryan. Sinead.
Black clothes creating a dark vortex, swirling, rising and falling like tea, almost filling the cup. Then, joined by the soft white of the milk, they melt together, black with white, neither winning. They soak into each other, creating a pale, sickly brown. The blackness softened by the white solid by the black, together creating the greys that we thought were just black and white. Voices of a madman. Voices from the beach and distant from them, floating in a sea of calm. Raw power, I'm afraid, is coming up from the bowels of the ocean. The city readers around my head, clutching and grabbing, kill, die, I must destroy. A cool breeze, scent of a flower, a rose, like blood.
Tonight. And next up we have Mr. Seamus Harrington.
I can.
Thanks, Bob. It's all true about texting. I said when we work today, did you get my text Friday night? One day. I did, yeah, but your enthusiasm doesn't come across in the text. That's so true. I was at a farm location, dress suits, dress shoes, people filing past, click, click, clack, clack, and there was silence. Sorry, I went past. Absolutely immaculate dress suit, and I looked to see if he was wearing boat shoes. That was cool. So, did it gave rise to this? What dress code you'd need to get in through the pearly gate? It's called Memo from Heaven, dress code. Because of cost overruns on the plaza, I've taken the fiscal decision, in the absence of the expected carpet, to preserve the white marble tiles and reduce unnecessary noise. Only recommended footwear will be allowed on procession day. Procession day will occur at weather-dependent random intervals of redemption. And a critical mass will amass at assembly points, same as for fire drill. Some of you, no doubt, will be familiar with those having come up from purgatory. A critical mass will accrue from a free-holding hostel, dorms only, in the event of inclement weather on the big day while waiting for the parade. An indoor marquee will be provided, excluding first rider. bingo, karaoke, and cloudy face painting will be arranged. No bouncing castle. The Three Steps to Heaven band will be in attendance. Note the exit signs and obey the stewards. No hawkers. If you can help out at the annual show, be an angel and give in your name to any committee member. Our big day takes 50 weeks to plan. It is known as Ascension Thursday. No category sign greater than 297 millimetres, portrait aspect at full arms reach, no foolscap. Yachties, not sand yachties. Boat shoes, at least three colours to include red and green. No hyperstore special offers. Anglers, only dark green waist-high waders. For heaven's sake, go to the bathroom first. Paragliders, hang gliders, microlites, kite surfers and balloonists land in the red zone of 6.52 light years diameter. Scuba divers, no snorkels, dry suits or masks. Booties, okay. Waistcoats, okay. Don't wet them. Things, where allowed, must be trimmed to show 5 mock toes in 5 of the rainbow colours. Orienteers, ice climbers and mountaineers, leave your equipment out of the body bags, crematoriums and caskets. Wannabe explorers, leave your mail order ski sticks at home. No skateboards, wheelies, blades or skates. Golfers, red socks only. No musical cartoons, double sword, thermal or darns allowed. No green feet, no bare feet, penance free zone, no sumos. Tennis and badminton tights, no black rubber dollies, soft shoes okay, white only. No boxers boots, no logos. Elvis lookalikes, no blue suede shoes. No platforms, tap dancers, or blasphemous so-called river dance footwear. No trampolining or pole vaulters. The pearly gates are far too high and may shortly be automated. The pin code will be known only to me and may frequently be changed. 3 tenders must be obtained first, of course. Anybody see a builder about here? No dwarf tossing, no limbo dance. For those of you in possession of a current dog license and canine cert for a clean bill of health, brown hush puppies, okay. No pets, no sponsors. Cameras and needles, no shoe-ins. No leprechaun soles, sneakers, or bound feet. No galoshes, sandals, or hobnail boots. These will normally be greeted by a slow wing beat from the shed end. No, you may not hire. This is not a bowling alley. Moccasins, clogs sole with recycled tires, espadrilles, pantooties and winkle pickers allowed for use only by ethnic groups. No asbestos suit to be worn going into a coffin or body bag. Who knows where it may end up? In the event of being able to prove this is your normal apparel on call, this rule may be waived. However, if disproved, the zip will be opened to midway, 3 drops of fast-setting glue applied, and the remains sent back to earth in a clear plastic bag. Anybody applying for a crematorium after the electric chair may claim a singe benefit. You're laughing at this, is very serious. Anybody applying for a crematorium, where laid out in an asbestos suit, will be surcharged 9.061%. Anybody not complying with these regulations may be sentenced to a further spell in purgatory for incineration, or a fine of 9.3 months salary, pension, plus benefits.
How about the best of cigarettes?
And be tied by the ankles to a self-erecting crane. No, bungee cord will not be used. Goals and other types of undead, this is not your stop. If you show up here, instant repatriation. No waiting list. The new prefab annex to your right, next to the hospitality suite, is a preliminary health check screening facility. If you can produce at least 3 means of identity and incontrovertible proof that this is your 3rd reincarnation, an exemption may be granted. And you may be allowed, if Baruka free, to take part barefooted. Mind the step. The toll-free wicket gate is a new development on trial run. Delays of up to 20 minutes may occur. Single file, please. Take a ticket and wait your turn to be air locked in. No tailgating. No pass-outs. I've no doubt you will see these cost-cutting measures, I mean efficiencies as necessary. When my boss, the first Undersecretary of St. Peter, returns from paternity leave, the situation may be subjected to a further review. All Souls Day, circular number 33. This notice supersedes all other memoranda. This notice is to be printed A3, laminated and displayed in a pale wood frame in morgues, crematoria, funeral parlours, church porches, libraries, community halls, houses of ill repute, and sub-post offices. This notice is dated 8th of October 2007. Thank you.
There's no hope for any of us to get to heaven anymore. That's it, you know. We might as well give it up. Okay, yeah, we're all coming to India. We're changing. Next up to the microphone, we welcome Mr. Alan Cote.
It says 14, very hard access to follow with me, Crystal.
You were counted.
What's that?
You were counting.
Okay, I'm going to do 2 points tonight, one by myself and one by Patrick Kavanagh. And it's like dedicated to the people of Burma, and the theme of tonight's reading is patience. So I'll start with my own point. As the apple waits to be picked and the girl waits to be kissed, divine patience is displayed. This is not the calm endurance of boredom, but the divine certainty that the future is here in each moment. Buddha and Newton sat under a tree, one discovered gravity, the other infinity. Patience was present but hidden away. They did not know what they were waiting for. They were not waiting at all, they were just answering their call. Who can be impatient when he sees like this? The future is here, each moment revealed. All that you wish for is revealed. The moment you revere, your moment is here, your mind is clear, infinity appears in a dropping tear, a grateful smile of 4 minute miles, so don't fear, your moment is here. This next poem is by Patrick Kavanagh, it was written during the Second World War, and it's called Beyond the Headlines. Then I saw the wild geese flying in fair formation to their bases in Inchicore, and I knew that these wings were their wear, the wings of war, and a man's simple thoughts outlived the day's loud lying. Don't fear, I said to my soul. The bedlam of time is an empty bucket rattled. 'Tis you who will say in the end who best battles. Only they who fly home to God have flown at all.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Alan. We just got one more name down after the open mic. There is a third part of the evening where we all get to write a poem, and the loudest chap gets a free drink. If you want to stick around for that, don't go away. Is there someone else who'd like to come up to the open mic whose name I didn't get? Just give me a shout. No? Yes, no? No? No, so we've just got one more person. Is she still here?
Yeah.
Anita Daly, please. Anita.
Shape in the sky behind us. The greenery a song and tune for exhausted heads. The day after a night when spring took over. These are a visual equivalent of a gig for people after work. They woo folks' ears and include their eyes. The audience afraid to stare too much at the band on the stage. No point gazing at the trees, beings either if you don't get lost in the meditation. Fresh air instead. Walk briskly, breathe deeply. Take confusion in your stride. Collage of trees, different types and trunks and paths and parts of the sky. Low stone walls and rows of houses at the edge of the park. Primary school on the corner. Fact is that the band has musicians' images, people famous, bringing the audience into the present, a shelter from the rat race. Variety of leaf shapes, one can gaze for a little time at them. Last pokes of the plant, and your eyes follow the trunk and foliage of the tree, and look at the huge, domed, dazzling sky. Leaves the tiny note within the massive context.